Welcome to The Digital Shift. I'm Jenny Reindorp, Director of Development and Engagement here at NHS Providers. This mini-series explores how senior leaders in the health sector can confidently lead their organisations in the shift from analogue to digital. We'll explore topics such as how to harness data, the importance of understanding cyber risks, and what leaders need to do differently to drive progress in the digital age. In each episode, we'll be joined by senior leaders and experts who have led impactful and lasting change in complex organisations. Our host, Chris Fleming, a partner at Public Digital and delivery partner of our digital boards and digital ICS programmes, will draw out practical advice and solutions by digging into the how leaders navigated the challenges of organisation-wide change and how you can set your teams up for success. In this episode, our host Chris is joined by Anne Kindelera, Associate Medical Director at Kingston and Richmond NHS Foundation Trust. Anne shares with Chris her experience on the role of digital and data in improving patient safety, and they discuss why it's never been more important to have a data-driven approach to quality, safety and performance. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, I'm Chris Fleming, partner at Public Digital. I lead our healthcare practice, but my previous career was in digital delivery and transformation in the NHS. But outside of the NHS, I've also done digital work in other sectors. And one of the factors I quickly came to realise that sets health apart is the fact that you are often working in a clinical setting. That's one in which a patient and a clinician interact in order to address health issues. And what this does is it adds a different lens on digital work. First, it means that you're working hand in glove with clinicians of different types, but also it means that you need to ensure that what you're doing is clinically safe and isn't going to harm people. And the stakes can really be quite high. You know, when your favorite retail website goes down, of course, there's lost revenue and unhappy shareholders. When your hospital system goes down, it can be quite a different story. So today it's my pleasure to welcome Anne Kindelera. Not only is she a clinical leader in acute and specialist care, but over the last decade, she has explored data and digital technology and how integrating them in the NHS can support the patient experience and ultimately increase their safety and improve their outcomes. Anne is particularly invested in how we might build or improve systems so that it is easier for clinicians to do the right thing. Welcome, Anne. Hello.
Hi.
Okay, so by the end of this episode, Anne, the plan is that listeners will understand some of the clinical risks and opportunities posed by digital and data in the healthcare sector and understand what they can do to improve digital patient safety. So, Anne, we start these podcasts with a series of quickfire statements on the topic in question. And so what we're looking for is very short answers, just one or a couple of words to answer them at this point. Okay, here we go. The priority for medical practitioners should be to use clinical digital systems as currently designed.
Probably not.
Using an electronic patient record automatically improves patient safety.
Definitely not.
It's impossible to integrate all the data sets within an organization.
It's difficult.
Sharing data between clinicians will improve triage.
Yes.
The more data the NHS collects, the safer it is for patients.
Probably not.
AI will save the NHS.
No.
Staff skills are a barrier to using clinical digital systems effectively.
Almost certainly.
Fantastic. Thank you for those, Anne. Look forward to returning to those in conversation. And now a longer answer, please, for this question. What's the biggest misconception about the way that digital systems improve clinical safety?
It's really easy to think that when you put in a digital system like electronic patient record, you automatically make patient care safer. After all, everyone has access to the records. You can see the information wherever you are in the organisation. It automatically calculates things like the early warning score, so you don't have to rely on staff's ability to do simple addition. But it introduces new risks, and it's very vulnerable to safety clutter. So what I mean by that is something bad happens in the organisation and you decide that in order to eliminate that risk, what you need is another alert in your digital system. So you need to be certain that you only use alerts when it's appropriate, that there are not too many of them. You need to think through what those alerts look like in your system. What you will see in practice as you stand behind your resident doctors on the ward round and say to them, what was that alert? That they won't even see it anymore because they're desperate to click through it to get to the point of the workflow that they are doing. So there are ways in which when you alert in digital systems, you actually increase risk. So we believe that digital systems can fix all ills, But they don't do that unless you think about the people and the process and think about how you reflect the risk that you see and how you make it possible for people to easily act on it in your systems.
That's incredibly interesting, Anne. And I love that phrase, safety clutter, as well. I'm seeing safety clutter as kind of a proxy for poor user experience design in a kind of clinical context.
That phrase comes from work in the new framework, which is called the Patient Safety Incident Response Framework. And that asks us to adopt a systems approach to the whole of how we think about safety when things go wrong in healthcare. How do you think about making it a learning event? And how do you think about the wider system which comes together to make incidents more likely to happen? And because digital is such a big part of the way we deliver healthcare, the digital tools are beginning to come to the fore, and the way they're usable or not usable comes to the fore. So work as done is not the same as work as imagined. So work as imagined, a digital system is your neat, whatever it is, quick reference guide. Staff will always follow through this set of instructions of your poorly designed system, which has been crowbarred from an American system to work in an NHS environment very often. But people come up with workarounds to make that work quicker and possible and to be able to do the things they want to do. So there are always workarounds in a system. And so it's how do we design into our systems and think consciously about designing out risk.
That's really interesting, Anne, and I couldn't agree more with your analysis. What do you think the responsibility of leaders is in kind of this context? Like, how should they be creating the conditions to taking a more design-led approach to clinical safety?
The approach that they need to take is thinking about safety and the way we use our digital tools is actually no different from thinking about the way we think about all of our processes in health. So that's the first thing. The second is to believe that it's possible to design processes that are safer and that you can make changes to your system. So in a digitally immature trust, it may be more difficult to make changes in your electronic patient record, especially where you don't have in-house teams that are able to make change. And that might be something for leaders to think about. Is that a given that digital systems are critical to how you deliver healthcare, do you really want to be dependent on the manufacturer's change team in order to be able to change your processes? And I would advocate that you should expect to have in-house people who are able to make at least basic changes to improve the safety of your system. And then to think about, this is about user-led design. So you need to understand how your staff use the system, why they use it that way, and therefore how can you design a system that meets the needs of the staff to be able to do things quickly and appropriately, but is also safer?
Yes, I completely agree.
So one of the big risks we see in people using electronic patient records in a way that I often describe as second-class paper is that there is a lot of cut and pasting. So your resident doctors have 10 minutes for the person who's leading the ward round to review the patient's notes, to talk to the patient, to examine the patient, to come up with a management plan, communicate that to the team who's with you and document it. So these happen in very short time. So people use cut and paste as a way of documenting. The problem with that, of course, if you cut and paste yesterday's and you cut and paste all the way back to the beginning of the admission, it's very unlikely to still be true. And it doesn't reflect the evolving thinking about diagnosis and response to treatment. And it perpetuates errors. If we were able to develop systems where it felt easy to enter data in a structured way that then pulled into a template for that ward round so that you can code the diagnosis and your problem list, and your problem list can stay the same between this visit to the hospital and the next, then you might be able to stop cut and pasting because the ward round template comes up and all you need to do is fill in the boxes. You know, what were the symptoms today? What did I find on examination? What did I think? And what's my plan? And then you start to remove the need for cut and paste by designing a better system.
Yes. I mean, as we said in the quickfire questions, the reality is it is very hard to integrate all the data sets within an organization. So what's the best way for organizations to approach that? What sort of prioritization might be a useful framework for thinking about that in your view?
So the first thing to think about is that data, you need data, and there's vast amounts of data in your clinical digital systems and particularly in your electronic patient record. We're both very bad at accessing that data and then turning that data into usable knowledge. So when you're thinking about how you integrate data, it's as ever in these things, what's the problem you're trying to solve? So we often need data to run the operational systems of our hospital to make sure that we have enough information to be able to prioritize people appropriately for, say, outpatient waiting list or theatre utilization. So work out what's the data that you need to do that. Make sure that as much as possible is captured in the routine processes that you're doing anyway, and then use that data to drive your system. And ideally, also capture data that allows you to measure something that matters to whatever process it is that you are doing, and then use that to drive improvement. So for leaders to think about is you absolutely need systems that allow you to do that, which will include having a data warehouse stored on servers that allow you to do that. And you need to think both about what the data you need and what's the time frame you need that data on. So if you're managing an outpatient waiting list, your data probably only needs to update every 24 hours. But if you're trying to run a hospital and you're thinking about flow and you want to know where patients are in your system, you probably need to update that data at minimum once an hour and more likely every 10 minutes. And if you're looking at patient risk and you want to think about do they trigger on your early warning score, you probably need that data to update in real time. So as a leader, you need to be clear that the structural kit you need in order to be able to think about data is important and you need to invest in it. And if you don't, you won't be able to do a lot of this stuff and your hospital will be less safe.
One of the other sort of thing that occurs to me in the debate around data and safety in the NHS is that there are different use cases for data. You know, one is obviously direct care, then there's secondary uses, operational data, management information, and then data for research, etc. We probably can't talk about safety and data without touching on information governance, where in my experience, actually, the governance is quite permissive, particularly under a direct care use case for sharing of data. But it seems that people get bogged down in IG in all parts of the NHS. Have you encountered that? And do you have any tips for leaders for navigating that?
My main tip is be patient and keep trying. I mean, it's endlessly a difficulty when you're trying to share information between organisations that people get anxious about their responsibility as data controller. So then you get caught on how you share data and what systems you can use. And I'm caught in that gap at the moment in trying to set up an integrated virtual ward between two boroughs with the possibility of five different electronic patient records, the two community services plus the GP's electronic patient record, plus a connecting system that is functioning a bit like an electronic patient record, plus our own acute electronic patient record, with permissions in some places to use all of them and in others to only use two or three of them. Those kind of systems very obviously add risk, don't allow you to care for patients in the way that you need to, and the only way to navigate them is to be explicit about what the ask is and the reason for it and its need for direct patient care, and be patient and keep trying.
I could hear in the tone of your voice the sort of the pain of some of that experience, Anne. So that's,
it's very... not what you'd advise for digital design for an integrated thing, is it?
No, indeed. But this is, this is the reality of trying to get integrated care working. I want to move on to the sort of hot topic. I challenged that AI will save the NHS, and you said no. I'd love to get your views on AI in the context of clinical practice and clinical safety.
AI is a digital tool like every other digital tool. It will make a big difference where you've identified a problem which AI is well placed to influence. And we know that already in the analysis of particularly visual information, so in radiology and pathology. We know already that AI can make a big difference. And there's an AI platform in stroke, which has been very successful in increasing the number of patients who get to thrombectomy and who have good outcomes. I think there's two reasons for that being successful. One, the AI is pretty good at being able to spot large vessel occlusion. And the second one is that the platform enables the neuroradiologist who is making the decision about which patients they need to see all the images on their own mobile phone. And that's the thing that makes the difference. It's a really usable system. And the fact that the AI is pretty good means the signal to noise ratio is good. So they know that if they see images, they're likely to have been accurately analyzed and they will be able to make a decision. So when you've got a real clinical problem and a well-designed process that people are invested in, AI makes a significant difference to patient safety. The problem is at the moment, because there's so much hype, that a lot of what we're doing with AI doesn't answer that. And we know that a lot of the sort of AI tools, which are well validated in research data sets, when you try and put them into clinical practice to identify patients at most risk, don't appear to make as much difference as we think they should. We know that consistently using a relatively simple tool, the National Early Warning Score, beats in real life practice all of the AI tools, which should be more sophisticated and you would expect to do better. Documentation in electronic systems is burdensome. We know there's been significant task shifting from relatively junior administrative staff to the consultant in their clinic room, and therefore people feel burdened by the process of documenting. So the advent of a system that could improve that is greeted very enthusiastically. I mean, I have tens of emails from staff saying, why can't we have this now? I think what we don't yet know is how to make the human-computer interaction safe in this setting. Because we know that AI hallucinates. We know that it is likely to make up things that have not actually happened and add them into the letter because they seem probable. If you have an ambient AI in your clinic that is 95% correct, I think it is likely that checking will be imperfect. So even though you think, because you've got a human in the loop, that document will be accurate and will be correctly checked, I think we'll find that it isn't. And the AI hallucinations very often become part of the record. And once they're part of the record, they acquire a life of their own, even though they're untrue, and it can be very difficult to correct.
And Anne, what would be your message to leaders of trusts or providers in terms of AI? What advice would you have for them?
To not pursue the latest shiny toy that somebody has shown you, and you will be under a lot of pressure from your clinical colleagues who will have seen something exciting that they desperately want to use, but to stick to thinking through what's the problem we're trying to solve and how do we design it, and to think as hard as you can about process. So, for instance, we were talking about ambient AI. Very few of the solutions that are out there are well integrated into the electronic patient record, but you will not get the gains you think you will get from your ambient AI system if you don't integrate it, because it won't be significantly better than the voice recognition software that we already had. Large language models have a lot of promise for enabling us to search electronic patient records, to better summarize notes, to create better discharge summaries. But we've got some learning about how humans and those tools interact. And we, as we've said a number of times in this, you've just got to think about what's the process, who are the people who are using it, and how does the technology support it?
Okay, and I want to move on to skills now and digital skills in clinical settings. And we said at the top of the conversation that staff skills are a barrier to using clinical digital systems effectively. And you said almost certainly. I wonder if you could unpack that for us and we can have a little discussion around that.
I mean, I might start it by saying some of the problem in that staff skills are not good enough to use our clinical systems as we hoped they would, is that our clinical systems are very poorly designed. So you need to be an expert in order to use them. None of us need much training to use our iPhone. In fact, we know that toddlers can use iPhones and iPads very successfully, whereas our clinical digital systems are much less usable than that, so require much more expertise and many guides. That's a particular problem in the health service, and particularly for doctors, because resident doctors rotate, and they rotate frequently. So they might only have 4 months in a job. So if you have very specific workflows for your area that aren't the same as everywhere else, you have to retrain people every 4 months and they never become expert. But what we know is that our digital clinical systems, and in particular our electronic patient records, are used like second-class paper. And in fact, typed words on a blank page are probably less good than paper because it's more difficult to use images and because it's easier to copy and paste. So there's always the potential for the information not to be checked. So how do we build systems that if we train people to use correctly, they want to use correctly, so they're not constantly looking for workarounds to try and make the system work?
Do you think that creating usable clinical systems is about configuration in the trust setting, or does that go back to the vendors?
There is some data to support what we know about this. So we know from the usability survey and the Class Collective that only about 30% of the usability depends on the system that you buy. About another 40% is probably down to the way that you deploy it in the trust, and another 30% is down to the individual user. The way we've currently designed digital systems increases cognitive load. Our digital systems present information to the clinician that we expect the clinician to act on. They don't always present that information in the most helpful way. So, for instance, within a single electronic patient record, very often the direction of the timeline for either laboratory results or observations can be in opposite directions depending on which part of the system you access it from. And when it does, you increase cognitive load and you increase the risk of somebody not seeing something that is really important. We know what makes the biggest difference, and these are, you know, the main things that as leaders in an organization who are thinking about digital, it would be really helpful to get right. One is shared ownership. All staff should be able to raise problems, and your digital team should be able to think about how to solve that. And where possible, making the workflows and the processes common across the organization so the need for specific training for specific things is less. And if you're a really sophisticated organization, you'll think about using the data from your digital system to target your training. So if, for instance, you can see that you have a way of working in outpatients that you want everybody to adopt, and one particular specialty has very much not adopted it, you should focus your training in that place to both explain to staff the reasons that you might want them to use the system in that way, and also meet their specific needs. And then the third thing is micro-personalizations. So the kind of shortcuts that allow you to do the things you do often in a really efficient way, things like auto text that allow you to enter information from the record into a note in an easy way.
Extremely helpful practical advice there. What's your view on the role of leadership and boards in creating the space for that kind of cross-disciplinary working that can create common workflows that everyone is signed up to and that work well electronically?
I think it's the only way to do transformation. I mean, nearly all of healthcare is at least in part digitally delivered. So you can't leave digital out of the way you think about transformation. In order to make that possible, we need to make sure that our digital team is well linked into the organization, has sufficient clinical input, and is open to feedback. That part about shared ownership in terms of thinking about your digital systems is really important. And that's part of a wider culture of making organizations safer, is that it's possible for everybody to input into making them better.
And that's been a fascinating discussion. So what I'd like to do now is just go back to the quickfire statements we made at the start of the episode. And this time, please feel free to answer in a sentence or two, drawing out the themes from our conversation. The priority for medical practitioners should be to use clinical digital systems as currently designed.
The priority should be to look at our current digital systems and see if you can think of a way that they can be made safer and better. Prioritising things like where it is possible to record structured data, because it will allow you to do more with your systems and improve your care.
Using an electronic patient record automatically improves patient safety.
I think it's very easy for leaders to believe that it does, but unless you think about it and you design the processes really well, it doesn't.
It's impossible to integrate all the data sets within an organization.
It can feel impossible because it's often very difficult, but if you're clear about what you need the data for and you focus on that, then it's possible to bring data together in a meaningful way to improve patient care.
Sharing data between clinicians will improve triage.
Being able to share clinical data across all the interfaces that exist in healthcare is really important for us to be able to design care that works with the patient pathway to improve how we care for patients.
The more data the NHS collects, the safer it is for patients.
It's not about more data. It's about more knowledge. So it's, can we use data that is collected in routine practice to improve our knowledge, to care for individual patients, and to improve our systems so they care for the wider population?
AI will save the NHS.
AI will be very useful in our clinical digital systems, both to analyse large data sets, to predict risk, and to reduce the burden on staff for administrative process and for documentation. We don't yet know how to do that really well, so it will be part of the solution for the NHS, but it's definitely not the whole of it.
Staff skills are a barrier to using clinical digital systems effectively.
We need to build systems that are usable and easier to do the right thing in. We need good training to use, particularly our electronic patient record. That needs to occur before staff start in an organisation, but also in an ongoing way.
Well, thank you, Anne. That's been an absolutely fascinating conversation, and I've learned a lot and some new phrases as well, which I'll be taking away. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Chris. It was such a joy to be here. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of The Digital Shift. You can find relevant and related content in the show notes if you'd like to delve deeper into some of the things mentioned in this episode. And if you'd like to find out more about how our digital support offers can help you in your role, head to NHS Providers' website. Thanks for listening.